Blog Talk Radio.
I heard there was a secret chord, the David played and it pleased the Lord. But you don't really care for music, do ya? It goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor four, and the major lift. The baffled king composing hallelujah, hallelujah. But you needed proof. You saw her bathing on the roof. Her beauty and the moonlight overthrew ya. She tied you to her kitchen chair. She broke your throne and she cut your hair. And from your lips she drew.
Talk to Cosmic Citizen. But a really fun and exciting show. This is a wonderful topic for me. Co-hosting with me today is my dear friend Pamela Chaddock. Crystal and Beak can't make it today. She has laryngitis. So, Christy, if you're listening, yeah, we love you and we hope you get better soon.
Yeah. Love you, Crystal.
Yeah. And,
well, what a way to start the show. That's one of my ultimate favorite songs.
Oh, that one just, you know, because hallelujah, it's hallelujah, you know, I mean, it's praise God.
Yeah.
It's a way to say praise God, and that's what our show's about. It's about progressive spirituality and thinking beyond the borders of what holds us in the body. You know, Jesus often said, I've come to set the spiritual captives free. And I love to ponder what he meant by that, you know. But I think I know when you see, you know, people kind of tied down into beliefs that crystallize and fossilize, and they're ancient beliefs oftentimes, and they don't, they're like old, you know, they're like new wine in old skins, and it just doesn't work. You know, you can't mm-hmm. call to the challenge of the current age with the trumpet blast of the past. So that's kind of what this show is about. It's about emergent Christianity. It's one of the coolest and most interesting, exciting phenomena that I've experienced in a long time, having been raised as a Christian in a traditional Christian religion. I was raised Episcopalian. And they're very orthodox and tradition bound, and these emergent Christians, from what I can tell, wonderful young people who are really pushing the borders and reforming Christianity, and emerging. And Christianity is emerging into its new self. And I love that because, again, Jesus said, the old things are passing away. All things are becoming new. Awesome. And so I'm so glad to have you here, Pam. And we also have Steve Knight with us. Steve is going to join us, I think, in a few minutes.
I'm here.
He's on the... Oh, hi, Steve.
Hey.
I want you guys... tell us your experience with the emergent church and emergent Christianity, and how you came to be in the movement, and your thoughts on it. So,
yeah,
and also we have some callers lining up already. We have one from 816 that's been on for about 7 minutes. So I might put that person on as well right now, if that's okay with both of you.
Oh, sure.
Okay. 816, area code 816, you're with us on the Cosmic Citizen. Hello? 816? Well, maybe they're just listening. Okay, so why don't you give us an overview, you guys, of emerging Christianity. And I know you just got back from the Solarize event.
Hello.
Hi,
it's Susan Cook. Paula.
Oh, hi, Susan.
Hi, Susan. I'm sorry. I have a delay in my computer and my phone. So, hello. Happy to be here.
Well, Susan is the chair for the Urantia Book Fellowship. So, welcome, Madam Chairperson.
Well, I couldn't miss this one.
Oh, good. Right. I'm so glad you did this. So, give us crystalline to Steve, that your story of how you came to the emergent movement is so inspiring, and I'd love to hear it.
Well, thanks, first of all, for the invitation to be on the show today. I'm on a little bit of another journey right now, so I apologize. Hopefully my phone won't cut off, but... been traveling, and this year's been a really interesting year to be able to get around the country and visit with different folks in different places, including the Emergent Village Gathering in Gloria, New Mexico a few weeks ago, and then just last week in San Diego with the folks who are at Solarize Learning Party. And Pam was there, and we had a great time. And just a bit of my story and kind of how I became a part of Emergent Village and this whole emerging missional church movement. I grew up in sort of the conservative evangelical world, and about 10 years ago, a little over 10 years ago, sort of fell in with this group of younger evangelicals who were exploring sort of Christian faith in post-modernity. And sort of all the different things that went along with that, what needed to change, how did things need to look differently in order to be faithful to the gospel in our time and our place, and that conversation and that group grew into a network called Emergent Village, and which I've been a part of for the last 10 years, and which has been a really life-giving thing for me to be a part of. A great generative friendship is how it's been described, and a conversation around theology and practice, and how do we live these things out? How do we follow Jesus, follow God in the way of Jesus faithfully in our time and our place? And anyway, that led me a few weeks ago to the gathering in Gloria, New Mexico, where we had a great few days together of just conversation and open space and friendship building, and it was just a great time.
Was, and I love the format of it, Steve. The open conversation, it's like there were no main presenters. It was us, and
yeah.
It was whatever we wanted to talk about, and we would throw a conversation idea out, and people would, you know, come and, you know, exchange with us individually, you know, in our conversation if they liked. There were almost too many conversations that we wanted to be in at the same time. But that is the beauty of this movement, is that everyone has something to share that's valid. And it's so rich. It's so rich, and it's so validating of the individual, which is one of the main aspects of Jesus' teaching, is validating the individual. And I just, you know, have been pulled into this movement because of how I see that, you know, Jesus' original, the heart of his teachings being,
right.
You know, being brought out by this, you know, emerging, it's like emerging reality, is, you know. And you especially, I have been the one person that I knew from the beginning. Because when I went to the first conference in Albuquerque, that Richard Rohr, and it was March of 2009, and I was just totally amazed at the intelligence and the joy and the all the different denominations that were there. That is what I think is one of the most fascinating things about these groups that we go to, is that it's not just one denomination coming and having a celebration. It's multi-denominational. And so all those, I was totally amazed by that, and I've been, you know, just enamored with this whole emergence since then. In fact, in May of the same year, I ended up in Washington, D.C. at Jim Wallace's poverty conference, and that same weekend, Emergent Village was having a luncheon, and I was in touch with you, and because I was trying to reach somebody, I guess, on Emergent Village and find out, you know, where the meeting was, because I was going to be around and I wanted to show up. And
right,
you're the one
right.
that you gave me the directions, and I met
That's
you there.
Right.
I met Mike Krogan and Amy Moffat, and just it was. So we go back a long way.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I mean, in what you were saying, Steve, something about postmodernity, and that's clearly a an integral, philosophical phrase, catchphrase. And I know that integral thinking is very much a part of the emergent movement. What do you think is the catalyst for this? What got this all going? And what is the, in a nutshell, maybe both of you guys can address, for people who don't know much about what's going on, what is driving the emergent movement?
Yeah, I think there's been different catalysts that have sort of brought different people into the conversation. But like Pam was saying, it's this emergence within Christianity is within each of these different Christian traditions. And so you have emergent, sort of hyphenated folks within different denominational groups. And they've had conversations individually and sort of there's been a lot of different activity. But I share kind of the excitement around how it's created a welcoming open space for us to come together across those denominational lines and across those different lines of division, where Protestantism has kind of driven us apart. This emergence within Christianity is kind of swirling us all back in together, not to throw off and disregard our different traditions and the distinctives, but to sort of be able to be in conversation with each other and learn from each other. And, you know, Brian McLaren, who's one of the thought leaders of this movement, you know, talked about this ancient future idea of going back to the altar of the past and bringing forward those things that have been refined by fire and are still of worth and still of value, and bringing those things forward into the present and into the future. And I love that image.
Yes.
It's one that I stuck with. Another image that I heard from a friend at the Wild Goose Festival this past summer that kind of describes this emergence within Christianity and kind of how it works within these different traditions is that of a forest of trees. And that's really originally where that language of emergence and emergence came from, the emergent growth at the floor of the forest floor. What are those new buds, that new growth that's growing up? Well, you know, the old growth trees, it's really the new growth on the tree is what's on the outside of the tree. And the oldest part of the tree is what's at the center. And if you think about it, you know, you think it might be the other way around, because it's the outside of the tree that's the most exposed to the elements and, you know, the most vulnerable. But that's the new growth on the outside of the tree. And oftentimes, you know, trees will be standing so close together that the outside of the tree is closer together than maybe the outside of the tree to the inside of the tree. So that metaphor of, you know, you've got old Christian traditions of different denominations, and you have the new growth. You have the young people, the new folks who've entered into that tradition. That's the new growth on the outside of the tree. But, you know, the new Presbyterians are closer to the new Methodists and the new Disciples of Christ and the new Lutherans and so forth. And so you have this emergence that's happening, and we're finding each other, and we're having this conversation about what does it mean to be a follower of Jesus, and what does this look like. And so it's pretty exciting.
Well, you're giving each other to discover that for yourselves in a way, and that's one of the things. I was at the Wild Goose Festival with Pam and Andrea Barnes, and it was just thrilling to me that you guys were having the conversation. And as somebody who's asked these questions since I was a young person, and that was, you know, 40 years ago, I'm thrilled to see people asking the question and having the conversation. And these are both things that you guys say a lot, and you gather in circles and you discuss. And I was sitting with one of the ministers, a Lutheran minister from Colorado. She's what's her name again, Pamela?
Nadia Bolz-Weber.
Oh, yeah. And she's amazing. And she said something to me that, not to me, but to us, to the group, that was so powerful. She said, who is in authority? She said, after all, she said, it used to be that the minister was the most educated person in the town.
Mm-hmm.
She said, but I look out among all of you, and you're highly educated, as much as me, and many more, maybe.
Right.
And so who's in authority? We're not. Nobody is. We all are.
Right.
And I just thought that was such a keen insight.
Yeah.
And that's
the
conversation that goes on at these events, and the questions about homosexuality. And they're being asked courageously. And so my hat's off to emergent Christians for having the courage to have the difficult conversations and to go out into the borderland where no Christians have gone before and have the conversation. So, Pam, what do you think? I know you and Susan. I want to invite you in too. If you have a question, just jump in. We also have another couple of callers holding on. So,
excellent. Yeah, I'm very intrigued by this whole authority question, because it. With my just limited 2 or 3 years with learning about this emergence, the authority question seems to be one of the toughest ones.
especially in the, I would say, the liturgical churches, because they're so much based on a pattern that honors the past and honors the ecclesiastical foundation of the church. And so I really like the power behind that question, and it comes up a lot. The idea that, you know, the power is now starting to, the authority is starting to come toward the individual is, I really feel, was part of Jesus's original message. And that emergence is recognizing that and struggling with it. It's not easy. But, you know, like you were saying, Steve, the idea of Protestantism threw us apart with our, you know, divided views. But actually, I think in a way what's happening is that if we took this multi-denominationalism to its final peak, there would be about 7 billion denominations because each of those denominations came from an individual's revelation. So it's like I really feel we're recognizing the value of the individual person's revelation and walk with God. And that's what makes these conversations, you know, around the different topics so powerful.
Right.
And also challenging, you know, and that, you know, that's definitely one of the downfalls of whatever, you know, the detractors of postmodernism and all of that is that it's mushy or it's, so I'd like to hear what you have to say about that, Steve, because I think that's a really big piece.
I think this is, I mean, talking about catalysts and sort of where has this movement come from, I mean, I think this, all the change and all of the leveling of these hierarchies and all the things that have created that, technological change and societal change, there's so much going on and it's affecting how we live our lives and how we live out our faith. And Anthony Smith is whispering in my ear, countering other religious narratives. That's another important piece. And that's you know, all these it's sort of changes and advances. We are in conversation now with people all over the planet, all over the world, and we're getting exposed to these different.
Yes.
Oh,
sure.
The internet. You know, the advent of the internet maybe really brought this movement on. Is that what you're saying, Steve? Steve, are you with us?
Yeah, I thought I heard him starting to break up.
I think we lost Steve, but we have a couple more callers, and I'm going to put them on real quick.
Sure.
Caller, area code 850, you're with us on the Cosmic Citizen. Hello? Caller? We're having a little bit of a problem with getting our callers on. Pam, are you still with us?
I am.
Okay. Well,
there's a delay. There's about a 30-second delay, so I think
okay.
That's what's going
on.
Oh, okay.
Okay, well, I have 850 on with us, and maybe we'll pick them up again. Area code 704, you're with us on the Cosmic Citizen.
I think that's me. I'm back. Sorry.
All right.
My call dropped.
All right. I don't memorize numbers, so you'd think I'd know Susan's by now. I've had to call her so many times.
Yeah, Steve, you were saying about the change and other religious narratives, and when you were breaking up, Paula was mentioning the internet as being a big factor, and I'm sure that's
right.
You know, especially your generation, you know, you just jumped on that, and it really had a lot to do with the spreading of it, and also the globalizing of it, you know.
Right. And so all of these things sort of, sort of the it results in sort of the leveling of these hierarchies, and like Nadi was talking about at Wild Goose, you know, the pastor is no longer the most educated person in the congregation, in the church. And so there's all of these things sort of, you know, throw into question then how we organize ourselves, how we function in community, as faith communities. And so, you know, all of these questions started getting raised, and so you had a number of people who have launched out and starting new faith communities and starting missional churches, missional communities, and neo-monastic communities, and different streams and different expressions of kind of how this thing is playing out.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an exciting time.
It really is.
Very exciting. It's just, to have been there, Pam, I have to give you credit because you've really dived into this movement with your whole heart, and you've studied and you've read, all as far as I can see, most of the most important books in this movement. You've made it a mission to go and attend the events and know the people and hear the conversation and know what's happening. And it's just inspiring to me, and I know you are inspired by it. I know you're
absolutely
inspired because
absolutely.
And like me, you know, you were 20 years ago, 30 years ago, asking questions that maybe might have been considered heresy at the time. And having been at an emergent event now, and I certainly want to go to others, I can see some of the issues that this wonderful group of people, mostly young, I would say, would you say mostly under 40? Steve and Pam?
I would. Everybody's under 40 for me.
Yeah, well, that's what it sounds like to me. It's mostly young people.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's like the elders. You know, there are elders. And I would say, you know, like the Brian McLarens and the Richard Rohrs and,
yeah.
I mean, even out there, you know, we got the Marcus Borgs that I feel that he was rather instrumental in this in the early 70s, 80s with the Jesus Seminar. And so, but mostly young people,
mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's like,
I'd say it's pretty intergenerational now, but yeah, it did start off, especially in North America with a lot of younger leaders, in the church. And
very dynamic,
yeah,
too. People like Nadia, who, and they're you know, breaking the stereotype. They're shattering ideas about where can you have a congregation? Where can a congregation meet? Many emergents meet in a bar, and have a wonderful spiritual conversation over a beer. And I love that. I really
mm-hmm.
do. I think
mm-hmm.
that Jesus drank wine, and he would go to a party, and he would be merry and joyful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the religion of Jesus is a joyful religion, not so somber and serious and sanctimonious. And, you know, Christianity is a religion about Jesus, but what I see in the emergent movement is the religion of Jesus emerging.
Absolutely.
And that's what's really exciting. And I noticed that you guys really address, when you're talking to each other, you address some of the issues about how to talk to the more traditional Christians, issues around funding, and, there's a bit of reservation and concern about being cast out in some instances, I think. Do you think that's... I picked up on that. That was kind of an undercurrent. I picked up at the Wild Goose.
Steve, you had you shared with me a really, poignant story about your struggle. I don't know if you, feel like you want to share that. Are you on the line?
I'm here. The phone cut out just a little bit there. Could you repeat the question?
Well,
yes,
the question Go ahead, Pam. We picked up on, and I know Pam has picked up on this, and she and I have discussed it, the kind of the struggle of being an emergent and in the face of traditional Christianity.
Where's Mom?
Hello?
I'm here.
Okay. How you have to do the dance in terms of, you know, getting funding and you know, it's kind of a marriage between the old and the new. It can never be a clean break, you know.
I'm on a phone call. I can't get off right now. And the Hesses keep calling and beeping in. Can you call maybe on?
Okay. I'm getting some static here.
Russ, is that you?
It is me.
Yeah, okay. All right.
I didn't know I was
Russ
on.
Yes, you are on the line.
I'm sorry. You're hearing me talk.
Yes, we're hearing you talk. This is Blog Talk. Yeah,
you're on the line.
Yeah, Steve I was curious to hear a little more about Steve's story of the struggle that he went through. You were sharing with me at Glorietta. I don't know if that's something you want to talk about, but it's like, you know, so many of you have been so courageous in this because you've lost your positions. You've been floating in the middle of nowhere, not knowing. Well, Russ, that's happening to you. I mean, it's like you're in this nebulous space of just total space. And I am so inspired by your journeys. And I think it would be really sweet to hear, you know, some of these personal struggles and how you made it through. Now, Steve, you ended up with Disciples of Christ, is that right?
That's right. I'll be able to answer that here in just a minute.
Oh, okay.
Hold on 1 second.
Hey, well, hi, Pam and Steve.
Yeah.
And Paula, is it Paula?
Yeah, it's Paula. Yeah. Who's this? I heard you say Russ.
Yeah, this is Russ in Colorado, and I spent some time with Pam and Steve at the Emergent Gathering, a few weeks ago, I guess.
Yeah.
Great.
And been sort of in and out of this thing for a number of years myself, and I'm 43, but when I got into this, I was under 40. Does that count?
Yes. You know, we're all growing up.
Yeah, I guess while Steve is doing whatever he's doing right this minute, I just have a second, but I thought I'd call in and say hi. We've got to get on the road, but you know, the interesting place that I'm in, and Pam kind of mentioned it, I'm in a transition myself, and I've been in ministry in churches for pretty much my whole career. And I think being in a position of transition right now, not necessarily by my choice, I have a certain level of comfort and experience in more established, even the more established evangelical context, and sort of being that voice of change and progress. And I guess I'm at the point right now of really trying to evaluate, is that where I need to stay, or do I need to sort of get out of that bubble, if you will? But I believe that it's important, that context is important, because there's a lot of change going on there. So I don't know how that fits into the whole discussion, but it's there's never a dull moment, I'll tell you that.
Well, you know, and being in that place where you are, you have the ability to affect the system that you're in and become like the leaven in the dough. And I think there's an argument to be made for that as well. You know, there's always the struggle between, is it holding me back too much and keeping me from living up to my full potential, the things that I really want to do and the changes that I want to make? Or am I helping it to move forward, you know? So there's, and my heart goes out. I mean, Pamela said that you guys have, you know, struggled, and some of you have suffered very real consequences for
having. Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think the dynamic that you're saying is something that I've been, you know, as you can imagine, very acutely aware of. I think what really brings it to a point of crisis is when, for the first time in 20 years of ministry, quote-unquote, involvement professionally, there is a breaking point where sometimes you're being that leaven, if you will, and then you lose your job.
and then you lose.
You know, you push too hard, or I'm not... In fact, I would say in my case just recently, I actually wouldn't characterize it as that at all, but it did come to a head. And so then it certainly makes you ask the question a little bit differently.
Hear, hear.
Yeah, so.
Well, and you know, I have to add that you have a great friend in Jesus. Because...
Oh.
Obviously, right? He did that. He was the leaven. He was the truth. And the world, you know, I mean, progress is a tricky thing. And he stood for progress, and he stood for advancing the religious concepts of his day. And who went after him but the religious leaders of the of the church he was in? You know, the existing religious paradigm that he came into. And so we know we have a sympathetic friend in him, but by the same token, we can look in our own hearts and say, well, you know, I'm living to the truth, the highest truth that I have, and that's an honorable thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that goes through history too. And I'll just say this, and then I'll run. I'll have to go. Unfortunately, I'll try to listen as long as I can, as we get on the road, but. I think we see that even throughout the church history, and being in some contention with over this last job ministry position that I was terminated from, with some folks that are very keen and knowledgeable on the Reformation and those kind of things. It's not, while I would be very careful to a category as a Luther or a Calvin, it's hard to not draw those comparisons and say, you guys that are having so much trouble with are standing in a tradition that was formed on this idea that change is inevitable and necessary. And
exactly.
I've been called a heretic, and I've said, well, if that's true, then, you know, someday if I'm going to go to the heretic's mansion in heaven, I guess I'll be hanging out with all your buddies, Luther and Calvin, and
exactly,
because they're
exactly.
going to be in there too. And you know, at least I can say there'll be lots of good German beer. And
right.
if Luther's there, there'll be good stuff to drink. There's no question. But you know, you see the idea there, and it is an interesting irony, I think.
It is.
Very.
That's such a good point. Because what is conservative today was progressive at one time. You know?
Right.
And
it doesn't mean that everything that all the things we're wrestling with doesn't mean we're always right. Any more
correct.
Than Luther or Calvin. I mean, none of us on this phone line right now would probably say, well, Luther and Calvin were right about everything. But the need to have the conversation and to wrestle with it is what it is. And on that note, I'll have to go because I've got to get my family ready to get out of town. But thanks for letting me call in. I'm
so
sorry about that.
Glad you joined us, Russ.
Sorry about the confusion at the beginning. I didn't know I was actually live, and I.
Oh no! It was great.
So.
It was great. Yeah.
But anyway,
well, Russ,
you guys have a great. I'm sorry?
Yeah, and Russ was great at the conference in Glorieta. He was I call him the great attractor. he pulled everyone musically around his guitar and then the piano. I mean, it was like old-time sing-along. It went on for hours. And it was so much fun.
It was a lot of fun. I'm not sure about the great attractor. If I'm the great attractor, I'm not sure why I could never get a date in junior high or high school. But but I appreciate it. It was a lot of fun and great meeting with you guys. Thanks for letting me chime in.
Yes. Thanks, Russ. We'll keep in touch.
God bless you guys.
Okay. God bless you.
Yeah. It's so I think that, you know, what Russ just brought up is so critical to our religious growth on this planet. And it's something that goes back to integral theory, too, and that is transcend and include.
Yes.
And
yes.
And allow, make allowance for other, you know, diverse ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's something Steve said, too, about the other stories. Everybody has their spiritual story or their religious story, and hearing those and sharing those. And that's what interfaith is all about, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anybody who's been involved with interfaith or the interfaith movement has become adept at hearing those other stories and honoring those other traditions and even mm-hmm. getting to the place where you actually crave to know what those other diverse individuals think and how they believe and how they got there.
Yes, and we find a commonality that we may not have known was there. You know, that's the unity aspect of spirit.
I did want to speak up here. One of the things that the Interfaith Committee does is we hold an online class about how to dialogue with other religions, and we use Diana Eck's work and Peter Lawrence's work, and it's quite something to learn how to listen without any kind of judgment or with any desire to convert anyone over to how you think. Mm-hmm. So we teach people literally how to think, how to listen to someone with no judgment, and then we try to graduate people to the appreciation of how other people believe and how other people think. Then from that, what we've done in Kansas City, Missouri, is we have a terrific interfaith group here, and we work together. So I work with Hindus and Muslims and Christians and Jews, and we work on projects together. And we work so well together because we have no intention of trying to bring someone over to our way of thinking. But we love and honor and appreciate that most believe in a God that we can all love. And many of us believe in a Jesus that we can all love, even though we may not believe in the Christian Jesus. We still have a relationship and an understanding of Jesus outside of the Bible, which is what we're looking at mostly, right, with emerging Christians and all that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, Pamela, the reason that I'm on the call was I wanted to listen to you because I'm always fishing for people to join us.
Well, wonderful.
Through the salvo out there, Susan, how can people participate in the class?
What they need to do is email me at Solonia, Solonia, at juno.com. And if anyone wants to participate in that class, or we also put on something called the Big Questions Workshop. This is via the Interfaith Committee. It is a curriculum that Peter Lawrence put together for Wellesley College. And then he adapted it for us. And the Big Questions Workshop brings together all faiths. And what we do is we go over a big question like, what is the meaning of life? Is there life after death? Is there a God? Are there angels? So we ask questions like this, and we come from, you know, the point of view and some references out of the Urantia book, but the only reason we do that is because we need a starting point. And then other people answer us from their point of view and their religious belief. And it gets us all talking about a topic like, is there God or is there life after death? And we go deeper and deeper and deeper. Mm. And we really begin to appreciate how we think. And you know what else happens is that many of us believe that wherever there is truth, you pick it up. It doesn't matter what religion it comes from or what thought, what philosophy. If it's truth and it's true for you, you pick it up. And that's what we learn from each other in these different workshops. And if anyone out there wants us to come and put on that workshop, we'll be happy to do it. We love the interfaith experience and would love to actually help people learn how to do that. That's part of what our responsibility is.
Oh, that's marvelous. That's marvelous.
Thank you, Susan. And again, that's Bologna@juno.com. If you're interested in participating in the Big Questions workshop or the interfaith class put on by the Interfaith Committee. I want to get back to Steve, too. Steve, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, great.
All right. Good. Yeah, in fact,
Pamela,
yeah.
That you had Steve, had an interest.
The... I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say one of the things that that was just, Susan was just discussing is that a God we can all love, and that's one of the things that I love about the Emergent is the universality of Jesus's message, and it's like there's even talk of the of a religion without a religion, that comes up a lot. It's like I hear these individuals referring to like you were saying, Steve, bringing McLaren's idea, bringing the best forward from the past, and yet moving ahead with overarching ideas that become more and more inclusive. So it's like the family keeps growing as we, and Susan, the spirit brings us to appreciate individual thoughts from other people and
right.
Which we can take and make our own. And so there's a powerful congealing of beautiful, thoughts that we may not have gotten on our own. It's like
right.
This multi-denominationalism and this interfaith seems to trigger new ways of appreciating truth. And so it's this universality is one of the main components that I was really attracted to in the Emergent. I'm sorry.
Well, would you say that the Emergent movement is more of an intra-faith movement?
There are aspects of it. It's still fairly Bible-based, is my experience. Maybe Steve could speak to this.
I've heard Phyllis Tickle talk about there being an emergence within Judaism, an emergence within Islam. I mean, emergence Christianity, it's specific to the Christian faith. But, I think many of us, and there are some leaders, people who have been out front on this. Brian McLaren has been one who's been out front on interfaith dialogue and understanding. Samir Simonovich is another. There have been a number of us who have been captured by, having grown up, I love hearing Russ's voice again, hearing his story a little bit there. We have similar stories. Those of us coming from more of a conservative evangelical background, you're talking about transcending and including that idea from integral theory. That's the opposite of what's happening within evangelicalism and conservative Catholicism right now. And Brian McLaren's talked about this constriction that's happening. The lines of inclusion are kind of getting drawn a little bit closer and more of us are finding ourselves on the other side of that line, on the outside. And
right.
And where the transcendence and inclusion is happening is within this more progressive emergence Christianity, where we're finding welcome. And but that interfaith piece is an important one, and Wild Goose Festival modeled that seeing that, where many of us who were taught, we were told, we were raised, sort of be fearful of these other faiths, other spiritualities, don't pay attention to them, don't listen to them, for fear of, sort of being led astray. And we're more, many of us, I'll speak for myself, I've just been captured, by this idea that all truth is God's truth. I want to be emergent. This idea of lowercase e emergent is about an open space for theological ideas to wrestle. That's really a Judaistic tradition, really wrestling with God and wrestling with theology and ideas. So.
Yeah.
Well, and it's what struck me at the Wild Goose Festival was all of these denominations, and that's why I said intra-faith, because you guys were all Christians there of different denominations, and yet that didn't seem to matter at all. And in earlier experiences for me with Christianity, that mattered a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
And I always, Christians have so much in common with each other, and if Christianity could find its common ground and just unite,
mm-hmm.
not stand on little differences of belief, but stand on the strength of their faith and the common faith that they have, what a power, what a force for good Christianity is, and will, and an even greater force will it become if it loses these boundaries within itself. So, I've kind of defined it, the emergent movement, as the Christian left, because, it is liberal thinkers and very deep thinkers. You guys are thinking. That thrills me. It's just, I think the next great bastion for humankind is to develop a quality of thought that,
mm-hmm.
Transcend and include, that does draw a circle and draw all of humanity in,
mm-hmm.
and not draw anybody out. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Emergent equals Christian left, because I hope that circle is even bigger than that.
I agree.
And I would never categorize you guys.
Just
in my own thought, but you're much bigger than that, more inclusive than that. And when you're having this conversation, you're having it with all people, with all Christians of all denominations, and including very, very conservatives. And I saw that happening, and it's
mm-hmm.
thrilling. See everybody opening, even if it is just a little bit, to entertain that,
Yeah, and I see it, too, as that progress takes experimentation. And it's like those that are willing to experiment, and try out new ideas, like even Russ was saying, it may not always work, but it's the attempt to reach for a higher ideal that I really see behind this movement. And like Phyllis was saying, it's global. Emergence is happening throughout cultures. So we're being swept up. And I see this Christian emergence as, a part of, the wave, the crest that's sort of, a little bit out ahead of the stability that, that we're actually founded on, that we're taking with us. But there's this breaking away and reaching and experimenting is tenuous, and it's frightening. But there's so much courage. I see so much courage and drive. It's like, regardless of, if I'm losing my position, it's like, yeah, but I have to hold true to my highest understanding of truth.
That's beautiful.
I'm just so drawn to what I've been experiencing. And it's like my family is growing. I'm just learning so much about all this, and it's been great studying and reading the books, and just it's just been such an awakening. I've had sort of a limited view, so
Crystal,
the whole experimentation idea is really what I see as part of the juice, behind this, like the willingness to go. Like you said before, where no man has gone before, kind of thing is really empowering.
As my friend Anthony Smith here reminded me, I think part of the what's at the heart of emergence is trying to get past those conservative liberal binaries and sort of these categories that keep us divided. But to find our commonality and find those places where we, can go forward together, hand in hand. And maybe that's idealistic, but I mean, this idea of trying to find a third way that's not necessarily, even on a particular spectrum, but it's sort of,
intellectually we will never always agree. We will never all agree, but spiritually, we're unified. And, that's just the nature of our different perspectives. So, Susan was saying, it's like to the degree that we're able to learn to appreciate a particular value in a person is how we get fertilized spiritually.
Crystalline is asking again. She's on the board with us. She can't.
Wonderful.
She has laryngitis, but she is on the board, and she says hi to Steve and Pam. And she said she'd love to hear your story, Steve. She said it's just so inspiring. If you could share your spiritual story with us, journey.
I think this is what we were talking about at Glorietta. Just in my experience, I've been in ministry for the last 10 years working with evangelical organizations. I worked for the Billy Graham Association for about 6 years, and then I went to work for a large evangelical mission organization for 3.5 years, where I felt that I'd be there for much longer than that. But and my interest in working for a mission organization was because I was reading a lot of this emerging missional books and really getting excited about kingdom theology, the kingdom of God, and mission, God's mission, and how do we, join God in what God is doing in the world, this making of all things new, like we talked about, I think Pam was saying earlier. But, I had a coworker who was not as excited as I was about emergent thinking and emergent ideas, and I think just felt like it was a threat to the organization and to evangelicalism, that I didn't my theology no longer fit, and he was right. My theology had shifted. My theology had changed. And what I'd hoped, might be able to be reconciled and, I might be able to live in this tension of working within an organization or where our views didn't perfectly align, that wasn't going to be possible. And so I had to resign from my position there, which was a little bit risky, but,
absolutely.
I have to say, it was one of those things to just be faithful to what I felt, I had the personal convictions that I had. And, it's been, it's opened up other doors to ministry and continue to give my life to this. And I'm thankful. I'm thankful for the 3.5 years I had there, but I'm thankful for even kind of going through that difficult time because it forced me to sort of land on some things that I hadn't really, had to land on, things like LGBT equality, where, I had to say, I no longer believe the things that I was raised to believe about this, and so that puts me on the outside of where that sort of line was being drawn, but I found a home. I found a denominational home and a tribe, and a new calling and work. With the Disciples of Christ denomination. I haven't grown up an evangelical mutt. Here I am. I'm in the main line all of a sudden, and it's a whole new world. It's been wonderful. So I'm grateful for all of it.
Yeah. Oh, what a great story.
that Nadia shared about her personal story at the Wild Goose Festival was that what she found, and her story is similar to yours in some respects. She found her tribe, but she found it in the Lutheran denomination, which many wouldn't have thought that would happen. And if they saw Nadia, they'd see what I'm saying. And she said that in some ways, that denomination, she felt, had really bent over backwards for her. And in some ways, she was shocked by how much they allowed her, how much flack they gave her. Can you have you experienced that too, Steve?
In terms of just the welcome in the mainline?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, well, you know, it's, again, you know, like so many things in Emergent, it was through friendship that I even got to know the disciples. I met a disciples pastor named Rich McCullen from Mission Gathering Christian Church in San Diego. He was hosted at Solarize. It was Rich who originally, you know, told me about the disciples. I was hearing all of these things that, as he described the disciples, I thought there's a denomination that exists like this. It really aligned with a lot of my emergent values and sensibilities in such a remarkable way. I thought, how have I never heard of this before? I mean, it's a small denomination, but it comes from a longer tradition called the Stone Campbell Movement, which has its own interesting history here in the U.S. But, you know, it just, you know, it has been really a kind of open-arm welcome into the disciples and really, you know, seeing this as a place to grow and to flourish and where there's, you know, not fear about emergence and missional Christianity, but welcome and interest and, you know, how do we go forward with this? So.
All right, so are you acting as a pastor?
I'm not, actually. Yeah, I'm part of a new church, Start, that's actually a house church that meets in our home. But I actually work for a new initiative of the denomination called Hope Partnership for Missional Transformation. And, you know, I get to work on a day-to-day basis with thinking about how to train leaders in disciples churches, both new church planners and pastors and lay leaders in existing disciples churches, to help them become missional and make this turn from sort of traditional church ministry or what we might call membership-oriented churches to being missionally oriented. And so it's exciting.
Steve, would you define missional just because I know that was one of the terms that confused me exactly, like for our listeners. So would you?
Sure. Yeah, my sort of short version of missional just means participating with God and what God is doing in the world. My sort of assumptions around that is that God exists and God is up to something, and God. And God's going to accomplish that, and whether, you know, whether we join God in it or not. So the privilege we have is to get up every day and say, I'm going to join God in what God's doing, and sort of be open to the moving of the Holy Spirit and saying, God, where are you moving in this neighborhood, in this community, and in our world globally? How do I participate in that?
Beautiful. As soon as you ask that question, then you get an answer. You know? it's a great question, and thank you. Great answer.
Mitch, you're looking forward, and I'm thrilled by that. You're looking forward, and I want to just keep moving with this. Now, where do you think the new church, 20 years from now, 50 years from now, what is it going to look like?
Wow. Well. You know, I really don't know, but what I see happening, especially over the next 5 to 10 years, is I see a lot of change, especially within, you know, I'm speaking, you know, within, well, I'll say within the mainline Protestant world, I see a lot of change because they're just, you know, there's just so many factors. The average church size in America right now is 70 members or 70 people in attendance, worship attendance on Sunday mornings, typically.
Wow.
And that's that church that's been, you know, that was the product of post World War II sort of era is no longer sustainable, and those churches are really going away. That's what you have are churches are getting bigger and bigger and smaller in order to be sustainable. Bigger and bigger churches are going to have people to fund programs, and you know that's why we have mega churches, and you have more and more mega churches. Mega church movement that's still growing. But then you also have more and more people who, on the other end of the spectrum who are forming house churches, small missional communities, neo-monastic communities, all kinds of different expressions. And they're smaller because they have less overhead. You know, they're not paying people to be professional Christians and professional ministers and pastors. That's also a sustainable, a lot of sustainable models on that end of the spectrum too. And so churches and denominations are looking at this and figuring out how they can invest in and help to, you know, help these different things flourish. And but denominations have a lot of money in buildings and properties, and part of the work that we're doing is helping churches that have had, you know, that haven't been around for a while but in decline to say, you know what, we're going to leave a legacy. And we're going to sell this property, and we're going to invest those resources back into new church development. And you know, I'm excited about that. Within evangelicalism, I mean, I that's where I came from, and that's still you know, have a lot of friends in that world, and I think there's a lot of talk about fractures within evangelicalism, and. You know, Brian McLaren has said, and I've said earlier, you know, it seems to be constricting as those lines, those sort of, you know, qualifications in order to belong, that list gets longer and longer. You know, there's going to be more and more people who are going to become either disillusioned or just, you know, disfellowshipped and find themselves outside of that circle. And there's,
it's,
you know, the fastest
it's
growing.
Reshaping
I have to
itself.
I'm sorry, what's that?
I was just saying, it's reshaping itself. And,
it is reshaping itself. And the fastest growing population, religious population in America today is the unaffiliated. People who, you know, are agnostic or atheist or for people of faith who have said, I don't belong anywhere. I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to check any box. And those, you know, and a lot of those people are spiritual but not religious folks.
Right.
And so I'm excited about the courageous leaders who are going to step up and say, let's figure out how to do community with people who don't want to, you know, and don't fit anywhere else and don't, you know, don't necessarily even want any of these labels. I mean, that's
there's
a huge question, a huge challenge.
I think that's probably the heart. That, to me, is one of the major attracting principles of emergence, is the inclusion factor. You know, the kids, the young kids that, you know, are rejecting traditional Christianity, like you say, you know, agnostics, atheists, they're being given at least a conversation that is fresh, and so I was gonna piggyback on what you were saying about the future, and one of the statements that Phyllis Tickle made on that very first conference I went to is the challenge to us today. She said, she was talking about the larger cycles, the 500-year cycles, and that we're in the middle of a transition. I think she calls it a petaflap or something. I don't know. It's one of her scholarly terms. But she said that this is the ripe moment. She says, what we decide in the next 50 years will determine the shape of the next 500-year cycle. And my jaw dropped when she said that, because it's like our time is now to really shape what religion, what you know, our value system, all of that is going to look like for the next 500 years. That's major. So,
well, we are clearly at the beginning of a new era. We clearly are, and we're at a crossroads. And I think that the world in general, and especially young people, look at the Arab Springtime. They're evaluating everything. They're looking at everything, and they're saying, this is what works for me. This is what doesn't. And, Steve, it's, you know, you're absolutely right statistically that many people will tell you they're spiritual but not religious. And they're making a distinction between that. They see the difference. What does – oftentimes, you know, religion is a word that's getting a bad rap, and sadly Jesus is kind of a name that's getting a bad rap in some respects. But it's because, you know, they're redefining these things. A religion means somebody of authority who is going to tell you how to think.
Yes.
And right now we're living in an age of communication. We're living with the internet. We can explore faith from all over the world. We can meet people in India and in Asia, and we can dialogue with them easily, daily if we want. And our paradigms are shattering because because of information and because we're thinking more about these things. So the quality of thought is coming, and that's why we're rejecting the authoritarian paradigms that tell us how to think. With all this information coming in, they can't tell us how to think anymore. We're thinking for ourselves, and we're learning what, you know, I'm sorry, I messed that up. They can't tell us what to think anymore. We are learning how to think. That's a distinction. You know, religions of authority try to tell you what to think. And in the face of all of this information coming in, you start to think for yourself, and that is how to think, how to figure it out yourself. And that's what's happening. People are exploring their own spirituality, and they're loving it. And they don't need someone to tell them, well, no, you're wrong about that, and, you know, God's not like that. And because they're just discovering the spirit for themselves, and that is the new frontier. And you know, so I'm really intrigued by the term that you use, Steve, where you say the new church. What do you mean by the new church?
Oh, I just mean new kinds of faith communities. New church development just means, you know, church planting, I guess, would be the other way of saying it, which is maybe that's evangelical language, but you know, people who are forming new faith communities that will embody this kind of new kind of Christianity, and be places of spiritual formation for people. Wild Goose Festival for me is one of these exciting sort of developments, because, you know, I wrote a blog post about this after the festival, that one of the, you know, besides the great music and the great speakers and conversations, and, you know, the most amazing thing for me was just being able to be there with my family, my three kids, for them to be able to experience this kind of environment where they can get exposed to social justice and spirituality and creativity and art. And, you know, that's just something that didn't exist when I was growing up. And so, you know, new exciting things like the Wild Goose Festival are happening, and they're expressions of kind of the flourishing of what's coming out of this emergence of Christianity.
It is very rich. And you know, worthwhile. And I can see why, you know, I love the term movement. Movement means something is happening. Something is moving. And and that's true. And it was great to be there with you guys at the Wild Goose Festival, and I'm so glad Pam invited me. And she invited me to New Mexico, and I would have been there too, except that I couldn't get the time off. I had some pressing issues I had to deal with. Or I would have been there. I would have loved to have come. And it's close to my home. I'm in Colorado, like Russ, so I could have driven there easily. And speaking of New Mexico, we have somebody, I think, from New Mexico waiting online. So I'm going to put them through.
Wonderful.
Real. Area code 505, you're with us on Blog Talk.
Yes.
Hello? 505?
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, this is
you're
Gil.
On Blog Talk with us. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Gil Flores.
Oh,
hi.
Hi, Gil. Welcome.
How you doing?
Good.
Good. I've been listening. Very good conversation. I've been listening.
All right.
Oh, great.
What would you add?
Hey, Gil. How's it going, Steve? No, I just think that, you know, I'm here with Holly right now. We were just having breakfast.
Cool.
And
wonderful.
And, yeah, we're excited about this new adventure. I mean, I'm personally excited about this new adventure that God has me on, you know, through, and I've been really enriched, you know, through the gathering that we were at, you know, in Glorieta with Emergent Village. And I'm kind of, since then, I'm kind of on a little new chapter in my life, you know, as a result of that. So,
as a result of that.
Well, not directly, but that was definitely a big factor. I mean, there was factors before the gathering, but
uh-huh.
The gathering was definitely important in my decision making. Yeah.
The catalyst.
Yeah.
Do you want to share?
Yeah, sure. I resigned from my church. I was a pastor, an associate pastor at a conservative evangelical church. I had been, you know, I have a lot of love for the people there and for that church and for what, you know, for all the friendships that I made there and all the work that we did together. But I just feel like, you know, this is a time where I really need to follow what I believe the Spirit is leading me to do. And this was part of that, you know, and it was a hard decision for me because this is all I've done for the last 15 years or so is work in conservative evangelical churches, you know, so this is definitely a little bit of a scary chapter in my life, but it's exciting, and I'm excited about what comes next. I'm really looking forward to this next chapter in my life.
Oh, excellent. Excellent.
How did you come to be into the Emergent Movement, Gil?
Excuse me?
How did you come to be involved with the Emergent Movement? How did you find it?
I started reading about it almost 10 years ago. You know, interestingly enough, about 10 years ago, some friends of mine and I in California started reading stuff on the internet and books and stuff like that. And so I've been observing it from afar for a long time until really in the last couple of years, I really started feeling that I was more my camp, I guess. You know, those are the kind of people that I identified myself with. And then in this last year, it's gotten more to where, like, this is where I think God wants me to be, you know.
And can you cite something that was like a turning point for you? Like, was it a book you read or an author, a certain author that just kind of struck, or all of the above?
Well, I remember the very first, I don't know if it was the first, but it was one of the very first things that stood out in my mind about that really made me curious about Emergent was, maybe Steve will remember this. I don't remember exactly when this was. But it was sometime, I think it was in the early 2000s, on Larry King Live, they were talking about homosexuality. And I think the guests were Franklin Graham, Pastor T.D. Jakes, and Brian McLaren was one of the people on that were there. And I remember just hearing his take, and it just seemed like the freshest take on that subject that I had ever heard from a Christian. Yeah? It just seemed like he had new things to say about that issue. And I just really liked his posture. He seemed to be coming from a very, he wasn't assuming to have the final word on it. He just seemed really open-minded about it and really willing to be wrong if necessary. And I just really, I don't even really remember what he said, but it was more the spirit with which he was speaking that just really struck a chord with me. It's like, wow, I want to pursue that. You know, that's the kind of Christian I want to be. You know, and so there were probably things I had read before, but that really stands out in my mind.
And that's beautiful. I love that phrase,
willing person. So clear, clear. Very, very impressed with Brian McLaren. And I, you know, I got to put in, Pam, David Glass wanted me to share.
Oh.
No, before he went with you to New Mexico, he says he read 10 or so books by emergent authors in preparation. And knowing David, that was, you know, he would do that. And
yes.
He said he would most recommend The Great Emergence by Phyllis Tickle. He said
yes.
It provides all-embracing history overview of Christianity and its turbulent narrative punctuated by 500 years of a significant overhaul. Christianity may be as moving at this time through another such very significant reformation and will be involved in the process of emergence for some time, which is what Tickle expects, and so does David. He says he agrees with that. And so I just wanted to put that in there, too, for our listeners, that David, who read 10 mm-hmm. authors, highly recommends Phyllis's book. What is the title again? The Great Emergence.
The Great Emergence. Mm-hmm.
And I know that I really enjoyed Brian McLaren, and I'm reading Robert Schur's book, Falling Upward.
Richard Rohr.
Yeah, and he's,
Richard Rohr,
right.
R-O-H-R, yeah, Falling Upward,
I'm really enjoying that, and I enjoyed his
mm-hmm.
talk at the
mm-hmm.
Wild Goose. So,
yeah, one thing about Tickle is that that book is very scholarly. I mean, it's very informative, but it's a slow read. You know, for me it was. It's like one of those books that really makes sense the second time you read it. But and I would recommend Doug Padgett's A Christianity Worth Believing. I just read that this summer, and it's a delightful personal story, you know, of how he discovered his own religious direction and starting in high school, you know, and he goes through each different chapter, discusses aspects of different points of the emergent viewpoint that, you know, he discussed, you know, with Bible references and how he came to actually, you know, based on his own inner gut feeling, you know, he was able to really succinctly discuss the different topics. And for those that don't know anything about emergent, I highly recommend Doug's book. I'm sorry I didn't read it right in the beginning, because it was just an easy read and great overview. So I'll throw that out there, too. But,
and what's the definitive Brian McLaren work, would you say?
Oh, gosh. I don't know.
Any of you?
I haven't read that many of his books, but the one I enjoyed was A New Kind of Christianity, one of the newer ones, where he has the 10 major questions that he would, you know, throw out, which is a, you know, great discussion topic type of book, too.
I would recommend A Generous Orthodoxy.
Oh, okay.
Probably as a good starting point for people who haven't read Brian McLaren. That's also a really good one.
That's what I hear. Yeah, David Glass read that. Yeah, excellent. Yeah, I liked what you were saying, Gil. Are you still on?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, I liked what you were saying, the idea of the spirit that you got from McLaren, the idea of the willingness to be wrong. I mean,
yes.
that says a lot, just that,
yeah.
Just owning
yeah,
that,
absolutely.
You know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that after that, I read Generous Orthodoxy, and that book was really helpful. He talks about, mm-hmm. I think it's the seven Jesuses, I think, in that book, you know, and he points out, like, the seven... They're kind of like seven major tribes, I guess, of Christianity, you know, charismatics, Catholics, whatever. That was really helpful to me to just see Christianity in that bigger perspective. And then at the very end, he talks about emergent, you know, and why he's emergent. And it was really helpful to me. I really appreciated the spirit with which he spoke about it, because even in that book, he says, I'm willing to be wrong. I'm even willing to be wrong about the things that I'm wrong about.
That's great. Yeah. Well, and it's the conversation. That's what I love about this, is that at least we're moving into conversation about all this. And, yeah, it's, you know, sometimes gets described as mushy or too relative or whatever, but that's what I think we're in a transition time, and I think that's what transition times call for, is let's, you know, let's just talk about stuff, you know, and we hit on this earlier, and so just the conversation is so valid. It's so valid, and it's worthy in and of itself, whether you're right or wrong.
Intelligent conversation, and that's why it's so valid and worthy, because it is intelligent. It's thoughtful.
Absolutely.
I'm curious, Steve, what was it that that sparked your imagination with the emergence back in the, you know, you said you've been involved with it for 10 years, too?
Are you
Speaking
to me?
Or,
yeah, I for me it was relationship. You know, it was friendship that brought me into the conversation. But then it was, you know, the conversation was about things that mattered, things that I cared about, the future of my own faith, but also, you know, as it became apparent, the future of my children's faith, and what's the faith going to look like for them. And and so that's become a real drive for me. But I mean, I've been part of an emergent cohort group here in Charlotte, North Carolina for the last 8 years or so. And that's been a life-giving community for me, even during a few years when I was out of church, outside of any other faith community or church community. That cohort group was a network of relationship and friendship that helps me, you know, keep moving and growing as my own theology, you know, as I got a different grip on my own faith and theology. So that's, you know, something that's still very important to me and really valuable that I value greatly. So.
Yeah, beautiful.
Do you say that your beliefs have evolved as a result of being involved with this?
Absolutely.
You know, you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Spencer Burke, you know, who hosted Solarize last week, and he, I think he even shared this. One of his sort of favorite sayings is, you know, if I'm not a little bit embarrassed today, you know, about something I believed yesterday, then I haven't learned anything, or I haven't grown at all.
yeah. I love
that. That sort of idea of, you know, of being open to new learnings and new ideas, and, you know, having that posture. But, and it's, you know, one of the things, one of the books that I've gotten done reading recently is Tony Jones' dissertation, his PhD dissertation, which he's published in a book called The Church is Flat. And one of the things that he talks about is, as a characteristic of the emerging church and emergence Christianity, is its epistemic humility. This idea of, you know, just having a posture of humility about the things that we, you know and the things that we believe. I think he's right about that. I think that's, you know, that's a pretty common characteristic. And again,
like
one of the things that I value about it.
Posture
well, it's
of
definitely
humility.
Something that Jesus was keyed in on a lot, to be, you know, poor in spirit. Which I think is to understand that you don't know everything. And so allow yourself to be teachable, like a little child.
Yeah.
You know, not childish, but childlike.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And but humility, that humbleness to say, you know, maybe we got this wrong, and maybe we can get it better. Maybe we can evolve our thinking in this manner by allowing ourselves to just think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And ask and have the conversation, which is, you know, it's brilliant. And wow.
Yeah, it's like the security factor of having the your security wrapped up in an ecclesiastical authority church And then moving out of that, it's like it's a whole new level of understanding what security is all about, becoming secure in the Spirit of God and faith in the guidance thereof. I mean, that's part of this big challenge today, is redefining what security is. That's another thing. I've said it before, is I just am so in awe of the courage of the emergence to feast on that uncertainty and go for it. You know, so it's like knowing the security is in the living God and not in an ecclesiastical authority. And yet, in the process of divesting oneself from the ecclesiastical authority, there's still a value there that can be brought forward. But the security is not in the institution. It's in your relationship. And you said it earlier, Steve, relationship is so important.
For both Gil and Steve too, when you stepped out, because you both stepped out of something, and which took a lot of courage, obviously. What was the feeling when you made that decision and actually did it? Did you feel like completely empowered? What was the feeling stepping into this new adventure?
Gil, do you want to?
Yeah. Sure. For me, it was a mixed bag of feelings. Fear, for sure. A lot of excitement. A little bit of disappointment, I guess, for me. But then also a lot of love. A lot of love from a lot of love and support from a lot of the from all the new friends that I'm making in
wow.
this journey.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been a big blessing. I think that that has been amazing for me. I think there's a saying that you can't receive until you let go of what you have sometimes, and that's really been true for me. Like I said, this is all I've ever known how to do is play music in churches, and this is what I've been for a living for a long time, and so it's just to feel the love and support of people who see what God is doing in my life has been really amazing.
Yeah, there's definitely a lament, in this. It's like you're leaving a family to make this decision. It's like you're leaving a form of fellowship that served for a long time, and to break away is really painful. And so, there's the fear and the sadness and the excitement. But yeah, lament is a big piece of what I've seen. It's good to embrace it all. It all needs to be embraced and recognized. And it's okay to feel sad about leaving something. And, pardon me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because in a way, what you're lamenting is you're lamenting maybe the values that you appreciated by being associated with that group, but that's part of our like an internal process that becomes who we are. We take that with us. That's our new value. Our previous value system is what we carry forward into the new, and the Spirit just manages to pull us ahead into the unknown and gives us some form of assurance that is palatable, and it's so inspiring to hear your stories, each of your stories of how you made that transition, because it is major. It's formidable what you're dealing with.
Yeah, one of the things that I'm learning, and I actually learned a little bit from Steve, and maybe he, you know, I don't want to speak for him, but one of the things that in our limited conversation while we were at the Emergent Gathering, I like how Steve has been able to maintain relationship with the people that were more evangelical in his life. You know, I really like that. I'm trying to really be faithful, or I'm gonna try to really attempt that. I'm on this new journey, but I want to still try to maintain relationship with those people from my past, I guess, if that's for lack of a better way of saying it, because I think there's something important there that maybe I can be of help to some people there that are also on this journey, and they're scared, and so I try to bridge for them too.
Exactly. Yeah.
Gil, or Steve, can you share a similar? I mean, what were your emotions, or your, you know, what did it feel like to step out?
Wow. Well, it's really encouraging to hear you say that, Gil. My experience, you know, predominant feeling was sadness. It really was. The place where I was working was a place that I had really envisioned myself really being able to be for a long time and really give myself to that work. And a lot of tears were shed on both sides. The national director that I was working for shed a lot of tears with me, really wishing that the religious environment in the United States were different, to allow our differences to not divide us in the way that it did, and so it was mostly sadness of giving up that future that I'd seen myself having there, and my excitement about that work, but you know, it did propel me into something new, and which I was grateful for. I've talked recently about not seeing myself as an evangelical anymore, as being post-evangelical. And yet, you know, it's funny, I got interviewed at the Wild Goose Festival, and I went back and I watched this video, and
Steve, breaking up. Oh, Steve. Are you with us, Steve? Well, we might have gotten into a little bit of a dead zone with Steve and I, and which saddens me because I was so interested in hearing what he had to say.
Yeah.
Maybe he dropped, and maybe he'll come back here. I'm sure he will. The reason I asked is because then on the other side of the sorrow and the lamentation is an affirmation, and both Steve and Gil have said that they felt called. They felt called to do this. They were following the leading of the Spirit within. And so on the other side of that tough decision is an affirmation that, wow, I did the right thing. I know I did the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Gil, have you experienced that? I mean, you kind of did. You said that you have, essentially, but...
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and for me, to be led by the Spirit means a lot of things. You know, I come from a Pentecostal background where they talked a lot about the quote unquote Spirit. You know, and so, I've tried to really stay open to what that means. You know, to all the different things that I can mean to be, you know, to be open to the Spirit. And absolutely. I think for me, for the last year, it was the Spirit moving in me to this decision was more than anything. It was a sense of discomfort. That's what it was. It was a sense of this is not. It was like it was akin to like when you know like when a like when a mother bird is pushing her baby birds out of the nest. It was almost like you had a fight. You gotta move out of here, and because I was really I get paid really well. It's an easy job. I love playing music. It was a really comfortable position, except for the fact that I didn't really feel free to voice my questions, my doubts, my opinions about a lot of things, without fear of being considered a heretic, you or just wishy-washy or whatever they want to call it, you know. And so, yeah, and so to me, at a certain point, that became really important, you know, to the point where it was okay to sacrifice everything else, you know, in order to have that. So.
Yeah, the peace of mind, that comes with being able to use one's own voice. Yeah, I went through a very similar experience with Pentecostalism. It was the first church I ever went to, and I was like 25, you know. I mean, that was after I was born again. The Pentecostal was, I loved the spirit of the church. I loved the fellowship and the singing, and I loved the pastor, but theologically, it just didn't resonate, and I hung around there for a couple of years between, Assemblies of God, and I never was able to speak in tongues or any of that stuff, but I just loved the living spirit in the church, and that, to me, was the valuable part I brought forward, and so I can totally relate to the, you know, the theological problems, because there's a rigidity to the belief system. At the same time, you know, they're totally open to the spirit, you know, in the church service and whatever. So it's like, I don't know how they can hold those two together, but but they do.
Yeah.
In fact, I just see this whole movement, this emergence as a form of a new Pentecost, you know, with all these individual spirit-filled beings, you know, breaking away and going out into the darkness, but going through the tunnel, knowing that the light is there. I just feel like we're in the middle of, like, maybe another Pentecost. I really do.
Yes.
Oh, wow. That's an interesting thought, Pam. You know, I want to share something, a personal experience with both of you, too. And we have a caller. I'm not sure if it's Steve coming back, but it looks like a Skype caller, and there was a bit of static on the line.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll try to put this caller back through. Caller, you're with us on Blog Talk. Are you calling from Skype?
Yes.
Hi. There's a bit of static on the line when I put you through, so I just want you to know that.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Oh, this is Andrea.
Oh, hi,
Andrea.
Oh, hi, guys. I thought I had to push one first to be heard, so I'm sorry if there's static. Can you hear me okay, though?
It's
oh, yeah.
Much better now, yeah.
Okay,
it was a lot of static, so I'm glad you're coming through loud and clear now. Good for you.
Okay, well, I just, you know, I'm listening and really enjoying the dialogue that everyone's having. I was there at the Wild Goose Festival in June and just enjoyed the spirit that was moving throughout the whole thing. It was lovely to see. I've come from a different point of view in that when I was 18 or 19, I really denounced the church because the minister of my church was embezzling church funds, and that just blew me completely out of the water. And I basically became an atheist and thought anybody that needs to believe in, that sort of thing is just, they need a crutch, they're idiots. I mean, I was really down on the whole thing. And yet I still wanted to believe in God desperately. And I was fortunate that when I was 19 or 20, I found the Urantia book. And I don't know if that's something you guys want to talk about. You know, are we talking just about emergent Christianity, or are we talking about the Urantia book? I didn't want
to. You know, I had asked Gil and Steve to share what it felt like to emerge, essentially, to step out, which is what emergent means to me anyway. And I had an experience like that, and that's kind of why I asked, because similar to you, Andrea, the difference, I think, for me between both Steve and Gil is I didn't have my mom quit going to church when I was 8 years old, and I was very, very spiritually hungry even as a child, and I kept searching and searching for my tribe. And when I was 16, I got involved with a group of more conservative Christians, and And I had an experience with them, and they were kind of taking me through an indoctrination process. And at one point, as a woman, I was talking to a friend of my brother's, my older brother, and I've never seen this woman again. I never saw her before nor since. And she said something to me that stayed with me for my entire life, and it may be the most important thing that anybody ever said to me. We were having this conversation about this group that I was getting involved with, and I was kind of going deeper. I was going to another level with them. But I wasn't inside the circle yet. And she told me, she said, they say they have the truth, and that may be so. They may or they may not. But you should remember one thing. If they tell you something that's true, that they say is true, but it grinds against your natural beliefs, don't believe it, because you don't have to. She said, if it's true, it won't grind against you. It won't grind against your core. And I was only 16 years old. There was something about that was so true to me that I totally accepted that advice. And it wasn't long after that I went back into a session with the lady that was taking me through this process. And she told me, she said, now, if you don't convert your mom and dad to our faith, she said, they will die at Armageddon, and it'll be your fault. And that just, I mean, I came to a screaming, screeching halt. I ground to a halt right there, and I said, wait a minute. I can't accept that. I cannot accept that God will kill my parents. My parents are good people. They're wonderful people. They have the fruits of the Spirit. They are loving and kind and tolerant. Jesus said, the divine fruits, the spirit of the divine spirit are leaded up in the lives of spirit-born and God-knowing mortals are loving service, unselfish devotion, courageous loyalty, sincere fairness, enlightened honesty, undying hope, confiding trust, merciful ministry, unfailing goodness, forgiving tolerance, and enduring peace. And that was my parents. You know, I mean, they were wonderful people, and I could not accept that God was going to kill them. And so I said to her, I can't accept that. You may think it's heaven, and it may be heavenly to you, thinking that God kills good people, but that's not heaven to me. That's hell. And I walked away from her, and I'll never forget. And this is the reason why I asked both Gil and Steve this question. We've lost their calls. I hope they call us back because we're getting down to the ends of the show, and I'd love to hear from them again. But what I said to God in my heart as I stepped out of her home that day, I said to him, God, you may be just the way they say you are. I may be completely wrong about this. And you are just as much of a taskmaster for these little details about what we profess to believe as they say you are. But somehow, I don't think you are that way. I told him, if you're that way, I'm sorry, but I can't worship you. But somehow, I don't think you are that way.
Hmm.
And as an afterthought, you're going to have to reveal yourself to me because I'm not getting involved with any more religion. So I didn't really have anything to step out of. I just never stepped in. I got waylaid before I ever got in. And but when I had that prayer, that moment with my Heavenly Father where I told him, you're going to have to reveal yourself to me because I'm not getting involved with any more religion, I felt so empowered. I was 16 years old, but that decision changed my life completely.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say I emerged right there. And I have never been the same.
Mm.
That everything in my life changed. I went from a C student to a straight A student. I lost the bad influence kinds of friends in my life. I just put them completely behind me. Nothing was the same after that.
Yeah.
And it was very powerful. That's why I asked him that question, because it was very dramatic for me. But as they were speaking, I realized they were coming out of a very solid community that we're already a part of, you know?
Yeah.
And so I understand the sorrow. I had no sorrow, but then I didn't have to step back out of something that I had already become really accustomed to and made friends in and, you know, had loving relationships involved and all of that. I wasn't leaving anything behind. I never went that deep in. So, my, you know, I understand that there's how much courage it takes. Oh, boy.
It's beautiful. Beautiful. Did we lose Gil and Steve?
We lost Gil. We lost both Gil and Steve.
Oh.
Doggone it. And I want to say, brothers, thank you so much for calling in today. It was a thrill to have you and just loved hearing what you had to say. Call in any. And Andrea, you know, maybe you can, you know, tell us a little more about your experience. I mean, you rejected, you had a faith community and you felt, you rejected it. It wasn't like a stepping out. It was like, forget this. I'm done with this.
Well, that's so true. And I felt very good about that decision. And yet, like I said, I still had this hunger. And so when I found the Urantia book when I was 19 or 20, I was just completely blown away by the truth that was there. And when I very first found the book, I thought, oh, no, it's got Jesus in it. Oh, boy, you know, this is another Christian deal. And, you know, this is so I was reluctant to get involved. But I did start going to study groups and the truth revealed itself very, very quickly. And I thought, well, this is great. You know, as far as I was concerned, the Urantia book proved the existence of God and solidified, you know, Jesus in ways that I just could never have imagined. I mean, and one thing that I would just like to read out of the Urantia book here, if I could, just maybe 20 seconds worth of some reading, is that it says, what the world needs more, the world needs more firsthand religion, even Christianity. The best of the religions of the 20th century is not only a religion about Jesus, but it is so largely one which men experience secondhand. They take their religion wholly as handed down by their accepted religious teachers. What an awakening the world would experience if it could only see Jesus as he really lived on earth and know firsthand his life-giving teachings. Descriptive words of things beautiful cannot thrill like the sight thereof. Neither can creedal words inspire men's souls like the experience of knowing the presence of God. And so, you know, I see these emergent Christians and the faith that it takes and the bravery and courage that it takes to do some of the things they're talking about. And I'm just thrilled about it. There really is an awakening, and it's really a blessing to be a part of it.
It is.
It is. It is. Yeah. Yeah, I've just been really wanting to be able to share the power that I've experienced with this group. I mean, from my very first conference, just the intelligence and the fellowship and the music and just enough ritual, you know, it's like it's a fellowship that had been missing from my life. And in fact, you know, most of the conferences that I go to, there is, you know, there is that core of those elements. And in fact, there really wasn't too much music at Glorietta. One of the young gals that was there, Burgundy, we decided not to go to a conversation that day, and there were like four or five of us in the lodge, and she said, this is the first conference I've ever been to where there wasn't any music. You know, she says, I want to sing, you know. And Russ, who was on earlier, was on the sofa across the room. And I said, well, Russ knows how to play the guitar. And so he started playing the guitar, and we started going through the internet and finding music. It was wonderful. It was wonderful. So it's like these elements find their way because they're so vital. And I mean, Gil was sharing, you know, how sad it is for him to leave the music
ministry that he had. And am I there? I think I'm
here. Here, we're hearing you.
Okay, yep. I'm just wondering if my phone is dying, but yeah. So there is a fellowship there that I really value, and I feel over the past 2.5 years or so that I'm feeling more like a part of the family. It's like I love it. It's like I go to these conferences and there's old friends, you know, and so it's like expanding the family. I'm loving what I'm getting from, you know, all the different families, and we all have so much in common, and I just as soon, you know, see us all meeting up together. I'd love to have some co-conferences, and I just think there's a real potential there for more, you know, cross-fertilization.
Well, and recently you and Andrea engaged in an email where you were speculating about what the new church might look like and what a new church service might look like. And, and I think what surgeons do is a lot like that. I mean, they gather together, they sit down together, and they ask the question and they have the conversation. And they engage in a dialogue, a high dialogue about meanings and values, and you know, these elements that you say, like music, they come in, they're very spontaneous, and that's, you know, that's always inspiring, and I think that's what people want. People don't, you know, religious people want to listen, yes, that's true, but they also want to be heard, and I think both aspects are valuable, and so I think the new paradigm is listening. And also being heard, also having a voice.
Yes.
And that's wonderful.
And the voice also comes through the singing and the music, you know, the soul expression. And then there's the social outreach. There's you know, as individuals, there's so many offshoots. And I'm sorry we almost didn't get to this, but there are so many offshoots of, you know, assisting, you know, those in need, that is very much part of the emergence, is the serving one another is very evident in the emergence, and it's these elements that are so edifying, so inspiring. It's like, you know, we're seeing. You know, the promises that were stated, you know, in our fifth biblical revelation we love so much, you know, is saying that this is happening. You know, it's happening now, what they said needed to happen.
They said it 50 more they said it 100 years ago almost.
Just about. So
they could foresee it, and wow, I'm inspired by it. And thank you so much for bringing, you know, this whole movement to our attention, Pam. You've been the trailblazer here, and it does feel like home. It's like Crystalline told me once. She said, Paula, it's just the way that we, you know, she was at an event, and she called me, and she said, I feel so good here. It's like being at one of our conferences. This is what we want to be, you know. This is we want to inspire each other. These people are inspiring each other, and they're courageous. And one of the things that Gil said, you know, moving out, the pain of moving out of his religious community was eclipsed by the fellowship he was feeling from his new friends. And that's a lesson that we can all learn, you know, because as people come away from existing faith communities, for whatever reason, they need to be loved and they need to feel welcome.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I love both of you, and I always feel welcome by both of you. So thank you.
Wow.
Good.
Thank you.
My two comrades.
Thank you, Paula.
My comrades at the Wild Festival.
Right. In fact, the Wild Goose is going to be, again, next year, the same place in Chuck Torrey Hills, southwest of Chapel Hill, June 21st through the 24th. And then that September, like a year from now, there will be a Christianity 21, I'm not sure the dates, in Las Vegas. And that will be Doug Padgett and Tony Jones will be organizing that. And the one that Crystalline and I and Christina Seaborn and Sheila Hansen went to a couple of years ago in Minneapolis was just so groundbreaking. It was 21 women speaking for 21 minutes.
Oh.
And it was delightful. So I know that Doug and Tony will not disappoint us. So, and I'm sure there'll be some other things coming up, but I'll keep you posted for anybody that wants to, you know, look into this. And it's very exciting and inspiring. So.
Wonderful. Well, and we are actually off the air right now.
Okay.
You got in almost all of those events, so I'm really glad you did.
Okay.
This, you
all
know.
Right. Good.
And
all
what
right.
A wonderful show. And thank you so much. And you know, we'd like to do a whole series on this, but we'll just keep up with the emergent movement and with you, and invite you back anytime you go to an event. You guys want to share how exciting it was, or wonderful, or emergent movers and shakers and authors. You know, you always have a home. So.
Oh, well, thank you, Paula. I love how you pull this together. I just love how you're the perfect moderator. you were just great. We missed Crystalline.
Better at it.
So sorry that Crystalline couldn't make it. She would have loved to have been a part of this. But,
she's
a part of it anyway.
Head on on the board, she said, "Oh my gosh, I can't believe you're having such a wonderful discussion."
Yeah.
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 Okay,
anyway.
Friend.
Yeah, thank you so much, both of you. Yeah. Thanks, Andy, for calling in. That was great.
Yeah.
Oh, I've been listening the whole time. I was just waiting for the right time to jump in.
Uh-huh.
Oh, you're awesome.
It was good. All right. Love you guys.
Bye-bye.
Right.
Till next time.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Cosmic Citizen, a radio program focused primarily on the study and discussion of the Urantia Book and its teachings. The Urantia Book is a religious text that claims to be written by angels and other superhuman personalities. If you are a Urantia Book reader or a spiritual seeker looking for new truth, we hope and pray you have been nourished and edified by our ministry. Please remember that the views expressed on this program do not reflect the official views and opinions of any Urantia organizations. There is no official interpretation of the Urantia Book. So all opinions expressed on this program exclusively reflect the personal biases of the hosts, guests, and callers who participate in these discussions. And remember, only a brave person is willing honestly to admit and fearlessly to face what a sincere and logical mind discovers.